This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu.
Arvindy Branch.
We're talking about what we could rent, from cars to houses. We rent all kinds of things. What could we rent but don't? And from armchairs to iPhones, India's millennials are renting it all, from everything in their office space to even in their house, for around 268 ringgit per month from one particular company. You can fully furnish your two-bedroom house with everything that you'd need. We've asked you guys for some suggestions. We've got a couple over on Insta Story. One that's just come back, and I like this one, from Lisianne, has said toys. So kids get through a lot of toys very quickly, right? You know, and if you could swap those out every 3 or 4 months, 5 months, you know, maybe buy the one that they might get attached to.
Yeah.
But there's the other ones that kind of always come into rotation.
Oh, right? I would never let anyone rent my toys.
Never?
Yeah.
You're one of those, are you?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I mean.
Of course.
Yeah.
See that smirk on his face then? All right. Okay, we're going to move on to Frida's story right now. Final of the day.
Okay, this is a report that came out, well, a story that came out from Harvard Business Review, Scott Kirstner, and he has an his company is called Innovation Leader. And what companies are good at innovation get right? So, you know, we hear a lot about companies innovating, starting different departments to just innovate and all that, but they did a survey with 215 respondents. This is together with KPMG. And so 215 respondents who largely represented the innovation R&D or strategy group inside large organizations. And so what they found from doing this research is that the companies that get it right, some of the things they do, five things he mentioned, one of which is they hone their focus. So it says, our model set of respondents spend less time and energy on incremental innovation and small process improvements and devote instead to transformational or Horizon 3 work, which defined as the creation of entirely new businesses. They're leaving the incremental improvements to their colleagues who work in the core businesses, spending their time exploring and testing ideas that will only pay off in the medium to long term. So when I read this, it's like go big or, you know, go home kind of thing, you know. So, you know, that small bit of innovation processes, that's something else. But when you want to start an innovation team, you're already thinking of entirely new businesses and new possibilities. Another one is they collaborate with key internal partners. The model set was much more tightly tied to three key groups in the company: strategy, corporate venture capital, and the corporate development or M&A teams, right? That makes it clear that operating as a lone commando doesn't work, right? What you need from the beginning is working with these people, because you can be trying to do all these ideas, but if you don't have these people on board, it's like, you know,
it won't go anywhere,
right? So the moment you know that you've got these people interested in watching you, then that will actually gain some ground and actually get something. So I think that's what happens, right? They do this, oh, we've got innovation area, you know, department, and they do all these things and nobody knows, right? There's none of these key three departments invested in it. And so things just sort of die, right? Mm. They staff appropriately. This is very interesting. While the most common staffing level for an innovation team among survey respondents was under 10 employees, the model set devoted more resources. Among the group, about one quarter of teams employ 10 to 24 people, and one third of them employ more than 100, right? So small teams can do things like technology scouting, capability building, and filling in urgent needs with business units. But when innovation groups want to move beyond running idea challenges and hackathons into actually building and testing new offerings that can generate significant revenue, they need more human resources, whether it's full-time staff, contractors, or other on-demand outside resources. So you can't do this on a small scale.
Right.
Maybe you start there, but you already have a plan to enlarge this so that it is, you know, something that you're serious about. They design incentive systems. So companies, their role model set, were more likely to offer all kinds of incentives to engage with innovation activities, recognition and awards, dedicated time to further develop projects, employee bonuses, seed funding, and even a financial stake in the new offerings they create. Otherwise, I know people are not going to be involved.
That's it. We want you to work harder, but we're not going to give you anything for it.
Yeah.
You know, you do that, people just not going to do it.
Work for free.
Yeah.
Right? And this is the side project.
But you do it out of love, Arv. You do it to raise your profile. You
know, exposure.
And I'm just thinking, like, you know, because Google has this 20%, right? Mm-hmm. Whether these things are in place. to get them so excited about doing things, right? They have their 20% to do and innovate and all that. Mm-hmm. They probably have the right people involved as well. Okay, one of which is they monitor impact. It's common that when innovation programs get started, a significant chunk of them haven't yet established metrics to track the financial impact of their work. But among the most sophisticated, all of them have created some kind of financial scorecard for their work. They were tracking things like revenue generated by their new offerings, efficiencies or cost reduction or internal rate of return. Financial metrics are not optional. Innovation R&D leaders, they expect their programs to endure or grow over time, must be gathering data. So you got to show lah what your ROI is all about before people will be interested, because otherwise, oh, how lovely.
Yeah. The staff appropriately one, I think, is like the and to me is the, like the most important, because we've seen like two different kinds of companies. Like one of them say that they are progressive and innovative and creative, but then they force it onto their employees. You can see that they have like, you know, getaways and holidays just to promote that sort of image. And then you have some other companies who are actually open and progressive and innovative and creative, who don't have to do so much, but do it naturally because they have the staff to back them up. I guess when you have just management that wants to push something forward, but you don't have the people to do that, it just basically falls apart.
Interesting that I was watching something about, funnily enough, toys. I think you may have seen it. The Toys That Made Us, it's called, on Netflix. And Frida, just to kind of put you in the picture, it's about when we were growing up, the toys throughout the late 70s and early 80s that were huge, and you know, we all kind of paid attention to My Little Pony and Transformers and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a My Little Pony episode that I was watching. And yes, I know. But My Little Pony by itself, when it now, what it is now, is very different to what it was when it first started. So when it first started, it was quite a large pony.
Right.
It was heavy. Mm-hmm. It was top. It was front heavy, so it tipped over, and nobody really wanted it. It wasn't a doll that you could play with and play with its hair and everything. So they brought in, funnily enough, a guy from a different toy company. And what he did was he brought a smaller team with him, and they moved into a separate R&D room. They'd already got an R&D R&D department, but he brought his own team who was specialized in creating, you know, smaller items. And they went off and they developed the smaller My Little Pony, while the company who'd created the original one just played with that bigger idea and how they could make that more appealing to kids. And he came in and he said, no, you need something that, you know, girls can play with and treat like a doll rather than treat it like a horse. And that was the kind of winning formula and why it went on to, you know, but that division of R&D at the very beginning was like, why have they got a separate team? Why they do, you know, and he went on to prove that they need these.
It worked.
Which is very interesting, because the sixth point was they move beyond culture clashes, right? So politics, turf wars, and lack of alignment were the top challenges of the 2018 survey. So, you find a different pair of challenges rise to the top, bringing employees to the right skills and getting access to funding. So, I mean, that's kind of, right? That's a tough one, right? These are the things. So all these six things you got to take into consideration, whether one or six, if you want to move and innovate, right? It's not just about setting up a 4-5 team, right? Unless you're really serious about
pushing forward.
Yeah, pushing forward and thinking of this as revenue churning.
Shall we wrap up then?
We shall. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for all of your messages, your tweets and your Insta replies. We're going to wrap up for the day. If you're only just joining us, we spoke about how from armchairs to iPhones, from cars to houses, we rent all kinds of things. And what could we rent but don't? Over in India, the millennials over there have moved into a renting culture where they rent everything that goes inside their house, even their phones to their laptops to their Google Homes and everything. They're renting it all. Mm-hmm. We asked for suggestions, and that's what we did the show on today. We then moved on to...
We spoke about how in China, if you want to get new mobile services, you will need to scan your face first.
Right.
And the article from Harvard Business Review by Scott Kirstner, what companies are good at innovation, get right.
Up after the 1 o'clock news, the world appears to be a flux. Global growth is slowing. Inequality with the lack of social mobility is rising. To make things worse, climate change and increased geopolitical tensions add to this backdrop of uncertainty. What does this mean for us? Is Malaysia doing enough to mitigate the effects of these headwinds? Helping us answer these questions on The Breakfast Grill was Professor Professor Dr. Jomo Kwame Sundaram, a Yale and Harvard-trained economist who continues to be active in academic institutions and think tanks like Khazanah Research Institute and International Islamic University of Malaysia. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow at noon for Enterprise Biz Bytes. We'll see you then on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.